And you're back at the Rule of Three. This is episode 23 for those
23,
who have been
keeping count. I saved it as 22.
Wow. What happened to 22?
Time flies.
I don't know. Maybe there was no 22. Maybe there's a phantom. Maybe there's a phantom episode there.
Ooh, the lost episode. That was always fun when TVs had lost episodes and lost episodes.
I think what happened though. I think I took your files out of the Dropbox. So you probably had no. It didn't say there's already a file there when you did 22.
Or I just didn't look. It could be either one.
Well, no. If it was one, then you're erasing 20. Then you're erasing 22. And
oh, yeah?
22 was probably the best episode ever. So if this is your first episode, you might want to go back and re-listen to that one. Ignore the bad sound quality on Slagle's part. But.
For once, I was not the technological culprit.
No, you were not. But also today, it being the second day of March, is also Super Wednesday. It's just it's Super Week. I think it's yesterday was Super Tuesday. There were primaries in 12 states, I believe, 13 states. I'm not sure which.
Now, I lined up outside of Best Buy starting Sunday night for Super Tuesday. I'm not 100% sure in retrospect that was the correct decision for this day. Their sales were very pedestrian.
Yeah. Yeah. Super Tuesday is a lot like Super Tuesday is a lot like Super Sunday, except the commercials are a lot more boring.
It's like if the media could invent a Hallmark holiday.
So I'm guessing you did not caucus up in Minnesota.
I think every person I know caucus, but I did not do a moment of caucusing. Was last night? Okay, it was Tuesday, uh-huh. Right? What did I do last night? I made tacos, and I read a Michael Connelly novel, and then I watched an episode of the new Stephen King series on Hulu. So I contributed to society in my own way.
How is that?
The new Stephen King's cut? Yeah, I read the book. I liked it. The show's pretty good. Yeah. It's kind of hard to believe Franco is an everyman. Like, oh, he's just your audience surrogate. I'm like, oh, yeah, just that weird space alien who looks like James Dean and writes terrible poetry. Just like me.
You're going a little too far. I haven't read the book or watched the series, so I have no idea what you just said.
Ah, well, Franco's a weirdo. That's the short take. But I did my buddy. Actually, I heard a good caucusing story. My buddy Corey Adam, a very funny comic, caucused for the Libertarians, and the Libertarian caucus in his district was in a corner booth in an old Chicago restaurant. But the booth floweth over. He said there was so many people eager to caucus that they kind of inadvertently took over the back half of this old Chicago.
That's. Yeah, you know, I love the Libertarian Party, and some of them are my dearest friends. But why caucus? you're gonna vote for whoever wins, and I guess it's easier to go to old Chicago than it is to go to Orlando in May, maybe.
Sure.
Maybe that's why for the big fight. Somebody pointed out as far as that because McAfee's running.
McAfee, I don't know who that is.
Oh, that's the guy, the antivirus guy.
Oh wow! So he's running mate going to be Norton?
Yeah. McAfee. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
He used his fine product.
Yeah. He essentially sold his product and turned into a Bond villain.
Oh,
he bought an island, and like he's living there with like a bunch of strippers and cocaine, and walking around in an ascot.
So he's the true libertarian hero in a way.
Exactly. He truly is. And there's some great stories about him, and also he did a great video about how to uninstall McAfee software. After he sold it, and it's like, why are you asking? Why are you asking me for? I have nothing to do with it. And it's just hilarious because he plays up on all the stereotypes that circulate about him. But as someone pointed out, it's I've done these conventions before, and that the candidates, what they do, it's really interesting. They all have these hospitality suites, where they buy like the biggest room, they rent like the biggest room in the hotel and do these, throw on these ginormous parties as a way to try to sway delegates.
Oh, so kind of like any given college function where they're giving out free pizzas trying to get you to join up for the history club or whatever.
Very, very much like that, except I don't think, I think the pizza's probably better in the college clubs.
That's not where I thought you were going with that.
However, somebody pointed out that that this will probably be the most interesting convention ever just to get into McAfee's hospitality suite.
Oh, yeah. And, it's like Xanadu.
Yeah. It's, Slagle is actually thinking. I left the party years ago for reasons I don't want to get into. But Slagle's actually thinking of becoming a delegate. Slagle wants to go to Orlando.
A stately pleasure dome, McAfee did decree.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it might be interesting now that there's a little bit of a contest for the nomination this year.
I covered it was in Chicago some years back. I covered for a newspaper the Green Party National Nominating Convention, which was a real hoot.
Which one?
It would have been in 2000.
Give me a city.
Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it was in Chicago. I want to say it was 2004? It must have been well, gosh.
No, 2004 was Milwaukee. That's the one I covered.
Okay, it must have been 2008. Must have been right before I moved. Oh, of course, the nominating convention, though, would have been early 08. Yeah, it would have been right before I moved to Minnesota and started comedy. And, because I covered that and the Republican National Convention in the same year, come to think of it, because I'd moved here right before the Republican Convention. Huh. That was back when I used to write about politics and read about politics.
Sure.
And it was kind of fascinating to see the no-frills hippie party, kind of what its version of a fancy hotel ballroom soiree was. Like, you know, there was definitely the contingent that wanted the chilled asparagus marinated in the balsamic, and then there was definitely some, like, dudes in hemp pants strolling around.
Well, I was actually at a very interesting convention. I was at the Green Convention. I was at the one where they blamed Gore's loss on the Green Party.
Oh, sure, the year before, of course. Because, canard, by the way. I still don't buy that at all.
Well, whatever. They blamed it, and
Greens did or the Dems did?
What?
Like, the Greens felt like it was their fault, or the Dems blamed it on the Greens?
The Dems blamed it on the Greens.
Yes, of course. Right. The Green Party people.
So the one I went to, there was a huge push by the Democrats they actually set up an operation where they infiltrated the Green Party to make sure that Nader did not get the 2004 nomination.
Is that how it was? It Winona LaDuc that got it that year?
No, I can't remember who it was. It was basically the guy after he was nominated refused to run and he endorsed Gore.
He
endorsed Kerry. Yeah, yeah. It's they bought out the convention. And Slagle, being the idiot he is, missed that story entirely. And it was there, and people were telling me about it, and I saw it, and all Slagle wanted to do was looking for people to make fun of.
Yeah, well, I get that.
Slagle was, and I didn't have a camera with me. I would have loved to photograph it. Slagle was pointing out that, and the magazine I was doing it for did not have the ability to do photos at the time, but the recycle bins weren't being used, and the trash bins were overflowing with recycling.
That's funny.
But again, I should have known. Well, that's because they're not Green Party members.
They're, right, they're just some douchebags.
They're Democrats who have been paid to make sure Nader doesn't win.
Because there were some for real granola hippies. I mean, a significant contingent at the one I went to. And it was interesting. I like third parties. I support third parties. I've probably voted for third parties more than a major parties in my life. But you get in there on the ground and you see why they don't take off sometimes. It's like, man, the bickering it's at least as intense as it is in any given major party, if not more, because there's like smaller scraps to fight over.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's a lot of the third parties tend to become debate clubs more than actual political parties.
Yeah. Speaking of college, it is like the hangout scene where it's like, are you just here trying to get laid with an old hippie? Is that what you're trying to do? Speaking of fighting over scraps, this is the scraps of the segment. Cast aside.
There you go. See you on the other side.
On segment two, rule of three, speaking of breaking-ish news, the Oscars were two nights ago. The Oscars newsier than the Oscars often are, I would say.
This year, yes. It was a controversy.
It was. And I'll say, as a preemptory thing, I'm a movie critic. I've been writing movie reviews for almost 17 years now. I've seen just about everything there is to see. I love it. I don't care about the Oscars at all because... For a couple of reasons. First off, I don't believe in awards for art. I think art, that's not what you're doing it for, and it doesn't work that way. How are you going to compare Fargo? You know, you can't compare a really great comedy to Schindler's List.
I'm sorry I interrupted there. I've been saying that for years. Every comedy contest I've ever been in, I've bitched about being in them.
Yeah, because
saying,
it's like...
Well, we should not be here. None of us should be here. But, you know, and then it's usually well, you can leave.
Yeah, it'll increase my chance of winning, right?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But like, you think, like, you know, Mitch Hedberg...
I always envision, what if they had painting contests?
Right, Leonardo versus Michelangelo. Only one can survive.
Well, yeah, you know that Norman Rockwell always would have won out over Picasso.
Or Thomas Kinkade, painter of light.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Exactly. It's just
and it
like,
pushes
well,
the artist to the middle as well because you're competing for the win, not for something greater.
Yeah. And the Oscars are even weirder because it's them voting on themselves. So it suddenly becomes like the mock elections that they do in senior year.
Yes, and more to the point, and one of the most shocking things to me, as somebody who's loved movies my entire life and seen just a vast catalog of movies, and read a lot about it, and I started doing comedy, and so I get on what I like to consider the absolute lowest rung of show business. Like the one that you would stand on if you were taking a photograph with your cousins, just to be seen in the back. And going out to L.A. and the grim discovery that if you want to find people who know nothing about movies, go to Los Angeles immediately. They don't watch them. They haven't seen any of the good stuff that's come before. I saw part of that on a screener. Like they'll watch The Revenant or The Hateful Eight on their phone, on their screener somehow, you know, on their digital download. It's like... No, to see a film that's a true piece of art, you need to sit in the theater and watch the projection of it, you know? And I even heard, I forget where it was, I just heard somebody saying that they happened to have seen all the Oscar-nominated animated shorts, and that anybody who actually watched them would have plainly seen that the one that won was the worst one.
Which one won?
I don't know, and I didn't see. I don't do the shorts.
People don't care about reviews of the shorts.
No, they're hard to find. A lot of times afterwards you can find them on a DVD, and I really like watching that stuff, but I mean, it's impossible for me anyway to stick
I watched current. One. There was one on Netflix, World of Tomorrow. I watched it.
Oh, I heard that was really good.
Yeah, that was it was really interesting.
I don't think I won. but anyway, so the Oscars – I never cared about the Oscars because it's just like – it's so political. It was like Denzel Washington wins for Training Day, but it's because they snubbed him for Malcolm X, or Scorsese wins for The Departed because Taxi Driver was really good. So there's this weird like satellite delay on people winning Oscars where it's almost never for what they should.
Well, there's also the bitter Oscars too. Spielberg did not get an Oscar until Schindler's List. No matter how many he sold, because everyone was kind of. You know, at the parties, it's, oh, I love Steven Spielberg. Oh, I think Steven Spielberg's a genius. Oh, he's a modern-day Orson Welles. But behind his back, when it was a secret ballot, it's like, I hate this guy and all his success.
Yeah, and all the axes to be ground, and it's just all that stuff. So I don't like the Oscars. And then
he turned me down. I read for Han Solo, and he turned... Well, that's George Lucas. I don't care. I read for Indiana Jones, and he shot me down.
Totally, yeah. It's such a weird, you know, so. It's such a weird thing. And so I just, but my wife loves him, and so like, okay, you know, I'll watch him with her because I do like the movies, and I was very curious to see what Chris Rock was going to do with his monologue this year.
You know what? Women like the Oscars for the same reason that they love they watch football, for the costumes.
Yeah, no, I mean, my wife straight up says it, and my wife is a, you know. I mean, here's the thing. She likes movies, and so she's kind of passively curious about that. But whenever I bring up all these points to her, she goes, "Yeah, but I like looking at all the dresses."
Yep.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. She knows what she's watching it for.
There you go.
But she also likes.
You know what? I kind of like the dresses too.
I'm not opposed to it. You know. I'm not opposed to looking at attractive people wearing fancy things. You know, it's got its aesthetic appeal.
I'm wondering how long it's going to be before an actress gets out of the limo absolutely naked.
Oh, Rose McGowan all but did that at the MTV like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. She wore like body chains, and you can only photograph them from certain angles to avoid going in a, you know, Penthouse magazine.
This is totally off topic, but do you know that James Cameron, when he did Avatar,
mm-hmm.
he wrote an algorithm that would always put a piece of what Zoe whatever, put a piece of her costume over her nipple.
Oh sure.
So that the entire film it made it sure it got a PG-13 rating because there was never any nipple shown, but it always looked like it was going to because of that damn algorithm. So like you'd swing around and the costume would move, just enough of it stuck.
That's interesting, a mathematical. It's usually that's the kind of thing that a nerd would write to make sure that there was always nipple available. The anti-nipple software had not been written before.
Well, yeah, it was a nerd. It was a very bitter internet troll nerd. It was kind of like, I'm going to make sure that everybody, nobody gets to see what I get to see.
Something tells me, though, that if you want to see some simulated blue avatar people sex on the internet, it's there to be had. In various hit horrifying forms.
Huh.
So the Oscars. So this year, of course, the Oscars, the big controversy, the Oscars So White controversy, not nominating any actors of color. My super short take on that is just it was a problem, but the real problem is a couple of movies got overlooked, namely Dope and Straight Outta Compton. Dope especially was really great. But other than that, there weren't a lot of great parts for actors of color, and there weren't a lot of really – and the other thing is it's a generational thing because the Oscars nominate these old, fusty period pieces, and if you're going to set a movie back a few hundred years, sorry, black people. You know, you're kind of relegated to certain kinds of roles. Uh-huh. I think that's part of just the Academy's old, foggy, faux artsy nostalgia. You know, so it's – there's a lot of vectors, I think, in this problem.
The other part is that we have to remember that movies are made to make money.
Yeah.
And
exclusively. Really.
Even though most of the Oscar films, you know, that's the other thing is some people, you can tell the films that are made just for Oscars.
Totally.
That are entirely. I mean, it's like a different category.
The King's Speech.
Right.
The ultimate movie made for Oscar.
And
I think
the truth is. I don't think that a lot of African-American actors, writers, directors, producers, I don't think they make Oscar films. Maybe Spike Lee, you know, makes a mate, but I don't think that they make movie for, you know, Tyler Perry has never said, this is my Oscar shot.
But more to the point, there are great. I mean, John Singleton,
Madea, Madea goes to the Underground Railroad. It's never gonna happen.
Right. I mean, but I do think you're right, and that's kind of what I was getting at. Where it's also a generational thing because, like I said, these great movies they're making, like Dope and Straight Outta Compton this year. I always blank when I try to think of movies from a particular year, so I can't think of the last particular year. But a lot of these really, really good movies, they're made for more modern – they're pitching to a modern audience. They're not making these fusty old period pieces, in part because, again, if you make a movie in America set more than 50 years ago, it really limits the roles that the black characters can have. I mean, you can't not acknowledge slavery and civil rights. And so then it becomes this, well, you can only get an Oscar if you're a black guy, if you play a slave or a soldier kind of thing, which is traditionally a thing. If you look back at all the Oscar winners, black Oscar winners. That's why I think a big chunk of it is this weird generational thing, which I'm not – it's just – it confuses a lot of things. But I think this is my short take on the Oscars this year, since we're running to the end of the segment. Chris Rock's monologue was amazing. It was so funny. I loved every second of it. I thought it was perfect to do the whole monologue about that topic. And then when they kept bringing it up over and over again for the rest of the Oscars, at some point I wanted to say, look, if you really felt that bad about it, you should have just not done it at all. Like, don't give me a 3-hour apology. That's ridiculous.
For the host, for hosting?
Not just the host, every bit about the show. Every time they introduced anybody, they had to somehow work it in. And now, one white person and one Mexican guy. And, you know, they just, there was so many things they were trying to do to cover their ass. Because let's face it, they all, the most liberal people in the world, allegedly, were the ones who did not nominate any of these guys and the ladies, you know? They did it. They're the voters, not us, not the audience. We didn't do that. They did.
Yeah.
And so they had this 3-hour-long apology to cover for themselves that I thought ultimately just almost mooted the whole thing, because it was like I said, if you feel that bad, cancel it for a year and come back next year and try better.
Oh, they were moving the black guys around like it was a Republican convention.
Yes, that's a perfect comparison. That is a perfect comparison, right? It was like, and hey, Louis Gossett Jr.
And a great place. In the already long segment.
Absolutely. And on the final segment of this week's Rule of Three, sure to be your favorite segment, Tim, because I'm going to tell you twice that you were right. Which is my favorite thing to hear from anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I don't get it much because when it's usually when it's in question, that I said, you know, when it's like at the art stage of argument where I say, no, I know I'm right. And they go, no, you're not right. Yeah, I know I'm right. I'm right. And I do a little victory dance before it's even been proved. So that, yeah, it's just, I'm a jerk. That's all it is. I'm a jerk, and I just have this. It's a genetic flaw I've learned. Is that my dad always thought he was right, and I wasn't even raised with him.
Oh, that's interesting. It's like born into your genes.
It is into my genes. Yes, the certainty that everything, and all my sisters are that way. We all believe we're right. So when somebody finds out that indeed I was right, they never.
Well, you know, I think you might as well do your dance ahead of time, pathological and hilarious, though.
Well,
it is.
I do. That's what I'm saying. I do before it's even been established that I'm correct.
Even if you're Gandhi, no one ever tells you were right. That's the sad thing I learned about life, about being right. No one ever gives you the satisfaction. Like, you know, perfect example, my haircuts throughout my life. My entire life, my defining haircut strategy has been, I want a haircut that you're not going to look back on and say it looks stupid. I don't look stupid now either, you know, but I want consistency. And I realize it's success. You can go back and look at old pictures of me, and I don't have stupid haircuts. But meanwhile, all the guys who had the really current modern haircuts were getting laid constantly off their hip haircuts that look back and ridiculous. But no one's going back and giving me any love because I had the foresight 20 years ago and have the documentation to prove it. It has not happened that way. So no one ever tells you you're right. You never get the satisfaction. So being right is almost not even worthwhile.
No chance of you ever putting on a sporting a mullet or a man bun.
No, absolutely. I am proud of that. I have a very consistent head of hair. But so today you will get the rarest of things. You'll get to be told you were right twice. The first thing you were right about was, we talked about last episode, I had my family reunion. And I was sort of dreading it a little bit.
More than dreading it. You were considering tripping down the stairs on purpose so you could break something so you wouldn't have to go. That's how bad you hated it.
Well, there is that way of remembering it, which is probably the correct way, but I choose another way. So I was kind of dreading it, even though I was looking forward to seeing my family. But you were correct. It was actually a pretty good time. Despite a hiccup or two, minor enough hiccup. Great to see the kids. Great to the part you'll dig. got to watch The Walking Dead with my nieces and nephews.
Oh, fun.
On like a big screen, and we turned off all the lights and made popcorn. It was a new episode.
Oh, how fun.
And so, yeah, the kids were like, oh, you know, because they all watch it. And so that was fantastic. You know, my you know, 12-year-old nephew is like the perfect age to be like just old enough to watch it and, you know, really dig it.
Oh, that's great. That's
so, yeah, that was really fun. So you were correct. It was a good time.
And it's been a good season so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the show's been really good. I think they've been wise to tonally shift a little bit so that it's not quite so – like they had that monotone relentlessness there for a while.
Right. What I gather from it is that they're actually going back to the graphic novel.
Yes, apparently it's getting closer and closer, which bodes poorly for some people, I'm sure.
That's what I've heard, that a favorite character, one that I think that you and I both said was probably could not die, is probably going to die.
Well, I knew that it happened. It's the only thing that I knew from the graphic novels. But I'll tell you this, my prediction, they keep the same plot structure, but they change the victim.
Huh.
That's my prediction. Just to switch it up a little bit. But
I don't know. You know, it's getting to that point in the series where they're getting offers from other people.
Sure. Oh, it's
getting
true.
Other
could
places,
be,
getting offers they want to take.
Could be.
And nobody wants to be Fonzie.
right.
You know, Henry Winkler never was able to work again. Fred Gwynn, pretty much Carol O'Connor.
Yeah, I want to be on The Heat of the Night, a TV show, Carol O'Connor.
Yeah, but it's pretty much once you've established a character so
Bob
strong.
Denver, the ultimate.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even realize that it wasn't Gilligan.
Yeah, I mean, the Bob Denver is like, haha, I was Maynard G. Cribbs, and now I got another role. I'm so smart. Intro Gilligan for the next 50 years.
Yeah, that poor Bob Denver was buried in that red shirt.
Oh, I love Bob Denver.
But Maynard G. Cribbs was the better character.
Absolutely, Maynard G. Cribbs was the better character, and Dobie Gillis was the better show.
Right.
But, you know, Dobie Gillis was very modern, very Ferris Bueller, him breaking the fourth wall and everything.
Yeah, I'm going way out here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet you didn't know that there was a third Bob Denver series. Well, fourth, actually. Fourth. There are four series that I can name. Two more series that you probably don't know about that Bob Denver was in.
Okay.
There was one called The Good Guys.
Not familiar.
Where he played, I forget the guy. The guy was pretty famous who played. I don't want to. Who's the guy in Taxi? I think that's who it was.
Lloyd? Judd Hirsch?
Judd Hirsch, I think. Yeah. I could be wrong. Played like an owner of a diner. And Bob Denver was a short order cook. And I only remember one episode of that where the newspaper got wet, and so he put Bob Denver put it in the oven to dry it off.
It's good to see it never got typecast.
And it started a fire, and unfortunately, Judd, I think, his corned beef hash. He was making his corned beef hash, and he took it out and he thought it was ruined. And he tasted it; it was delicious. And he started selling his famous smoked hash.
Oh, smoked hash!
And then,
that's okay.
And the cops came.
So. That's funny. All right, good for Bob Denver.
And that's all I remember about that series. But there was another one after that called Dusty's Trail.
Ooh, that's a bad title.
Yeah, and basically what it was a stagecoach on the Oregon Trail, where there was the stagecoach owned, the guy who owned the stagecoach, and then Dusty was riding shotgun, and they were taking a dance hall girl, a country girl from Kansas, a banker and his wife.
What?
Honest to God.
Gilligan's Trail?
Yes.
Oh.
And they got lost on the Oregon Trail.
Wow. That is a nice little factoid. Speaking of other things, the other thing you were right about before we go here today, this was the one you didn't bring up on here. You mentioned this. I don't know if we were texting or something, but Facebooking or something. But I mentioned I was working at a new club, not just for me, but a brand new club, Helium in St. Louis. Found out when I got there, it was the eighth week they'd been open.
Wow.
which is pretty darn fresh for a comedy club, you know. And that's
the paint. You can still when the paint is still a stronger smell than the stale booze.
Oh, very much. Yeah, I mean, it smelled like a new car in there, just about. And you said that it was very interesting, and for a lot of reasons.
Crisp carpet on the stage. You walk on the stage, yeah. And it's crisp carpet.
It was great, and you were totally right. It was a great the equipment. And
no
interesting...
clicks when you take the mic out of the stand; it doesn't click.
Yeah, and like every, but the thing that you said that cracked me up one of the most was that the most telling part was you said the waitresses will all be so happy because they won't have been jaded by having to deal with stupid drunk jerk comedians yet
hitting on them.
And you hit right. So they were like the waitstaff; they were all so nice, and they were all just like so into comedy. And I was just like, oh gosh, some super jerky guys are going to be going to really grind your enthusiasm for this.
Oh, it always is. It always is. They're like vultures. The comics are like vultures. They love to swarm the new waitress.
Yeah, and they're all so nice. But the good thing for that club, it's being the manager has some extensive comedy club experience. So I mean, man, the place runs. I couldn't believe it was running that well when it was that new. It was like where are more kinks? We should have more kinks, you know. But it was just it was just smooth as silk. And so it's going to be a great club. So anybody
good, good crowds too. Good crowds too. I bet.
Yeah, right off the bat, they're in the St. Louis Galleria, which is a nice kind of mall. But I would definitely say anybody in the St. Louis area, definitely check that club out. It is. It is a really, really nice room and well run. And I was telling the manager, I was like, if it's this good now, like in a year when people are used to it being there, oof, you know, but the poor waitresses will probably be a little more frazzled, but the shows will be even better. And you were totally right. It was great to get to take a spin in a new club like that. That's a new experience for me.
And I'm sure in a year, this podcast will be even better.
Perfect spot.
For today, we're out of time. TimSlegel.com, that's where you can find all the podcasts listed.
Yes, and BrianMillerComedy.com, Brian with a Y. It's got to get my webmaster to get that RSS feed, and you can find them there, too, after that. At BMillerComedy on Twitter, also, if you're into that.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.